Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about a Chinese education company that has given a lot of money to officials of some top universities in the United States. The news has made a lot of folks uncomfortable. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo tells us about a common object, buttons, that appears in many American English expressions. Her program might push your buttons, but I hope you'll listen to it anyway. And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will tell you about an important decision American military planners had to make when the United States entered the Second World War at the end of 1941. American forces could not fight effectively in Asia and Europe at the same time. So, what was the United States to do? So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today, so let's get started. Here's higher education correspondent Pete Musto.
A Chinese education company has given thousands of dollars to representatives of top universities in the United States. Reuters news agency says the money was for services to help Chinese students apply to these schools. Reuters suggests the company did more than help the students. In October, Reuters reported on claims of cheating by 8 former employees of DuPont Education Management Group. The company is based in Shanghai. 6 of the former employees say they wrote application essays for students. Almost all universities in the U.S. require students to prepare their own application materials.
Another former employee of DuPont told Reuters she changed letters of recommendation teachers had written for students. And another said the company let a student remove bad marks from the records of his academic performance in high school. DuPont released a response on its website shortly after Reuters published its story. The company denied the claims and said Reuters had misrepresented the educational exchange between the U.S. and China. The company has a relationship with about 20 U.S. colleges and universities. This includes Vanderbilt University, Wellesley College, Tulane, and the University of Virginia. Admissions officers from these schools have attended special DuPont events in China each summer since 2014. The events involved personal meetings with students to help improve their success in applying for college. DuPont paid for the travel costs of the admissions officers attending the event, Reuters said. Reuters also said emails it reviewed show DuPont gave money to some of the officers.
The Institute of International Education is an organization that researches international student exchanges. The organization reported that more than 300,000 Chinese college students studied in the U.S. in 2015. There is a lot of competition among both students and universities. Schools look to international students to help increase income from tuition payments. Hundreds of Chinese companies are offering services to help students get into top schools. The companies often charge a lot of money for this help, but sometimes that help may go too far. In the past year, Reuters, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and VOA have reported incidents of cheating on college application materials from China. DuPont founder and chief executive Benson Zhang says his company is not involved in any wrongdoing. Many schools, students, and overseas colleges consider us one of the most ethical companies in China, he told Reuters in an interview. Zhang denies claims from the former employees that they tried to report incidents of rule-breaking. If there had been such a case, it was not reported to me, he said. But I guarantee you, if such a complaint comes to my attention, I will deal with it severely.
Former DuPont employee Bruce Hammond says he tried to warn several schools about the company. In 2014, Hammond emailed officials at the University of Southern California, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Duke University, and others. He wrote that DuPont was one of the companies most responsible for fraud in the application process.
Information provided by DuPont shows that admissions officers from 22 colleges and universities have attended its summer workshops since 2014. The gatherings are held in Shanghai. The company paid for the cost of officers' flights. Emails show that in some cases, admissions officers could choose less costly flights in exchange for up to $4,500 in cash. Officials from Vanderbilt University, Pomona College, and others admit to accepting free flights. But the Vanderbilt Dean of Admissions, Douglas Christensen, said his admissions officer refused the cash. Christensen told Reuters it would have been improper to accept the money.
I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, here's Anna Mateo with Words and Their Stories.
Now, Words and Their Stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore the meaning of everyday expressions in the English language. Today, we talk about a common object that appears in many expressions: buttons. When we pronounce this word, we sometimes swallow the T's and pronounce it button. Buttons are found on all sorts of clothing. They are usually small and round and made of metal or plastic. They fasten or connect one piece of clothing to another. They make sure your clothes don't fall off. When speaking or writing in English, buttons can be just as useful. Some buttons can be beautiful and even have very fine details. But are they cute? To be cute as a button is an old saying. It means to be attractive or sweet, but in a small way. Babies are often described as cute as a button. Language experts don't know why, but they do say this expression dates back to the late 1860s. But we do know more about two other button expressions, button down and buttoned up. Men or women often wear button-down shirts to the office. Button-down as an adjective means to be conservative or traditional. People described as buttoned down stay close as possible to the normal way of dressing and behaving. They don't wear crazy clothing or do unusual things. People and events can both be described as buttoned down. We should note here that as an adjective, you can either say buttoned down or button down. However, the adjective buttoned up is a little different. If someone is buttoned up, he or she seems very businesslike. In personal relationships, a buttoned up person is cold and standoffish, meaning they physically and emotionally keep away from others. Buttoned up people are not warm or friendly, and they do not share their inner thoughts and feelings with others. Using buttoned up as an adjective always uses buttoned. In the expression button up, button is a verb. It means to stop talking. There are many other ways button is used as a verb. When you fasten a button, you can also just say, button a button. So you can say to a friend, hey, your top button is unbuttoned. You should button it. When you button a button, you slip it into a buttonhole. A buttonhole traps the button. So to buttonhole someone means you have trapped them in a spoken conversation. Now let's say you find yourself buttonholed in a conversation at a party. The person just keeps talking and talking and talking. Finally, you can't take it any longer. You tell the person to button it. This is a direct but unacceptable way of saying stop talking. Button your lip is another equally rude but effective way to stop a person who talks too much. Keep in mind, these expressions should only be used in extreme situations with difficult people. And that brings us to the end of Words and Their Stories. But don't push the panic button. We'll be back next week. I'm Anna Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. Now we present The Making of a Nation. American military planners had to make an important decision when the United States entered the Second World War at the end of 1941. American forces could not fight effectively in Asia and Europe at the same time. So the military planners decided to use most of their forces to defeat the German troops of Adolf Hitler. Only after victory over the Nazis was clear in Europe would they use all of America's military strength to fight Japan in Asia and the Pacific. Because of this decision, Japan was able to win many of the early battles of the war in Asia. The fighting in the Pacific is the subject of our program today.
Japanese planes bombed the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii on December 7, 1941.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii by air, President Roosevelt has just announced.
We take you now to Washington.
The attack apparently was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
The surprise raid marked the first of several major victories for the Japanese. Shortly after Pearl Harbor, Imperial forces attacked American bases in the Philippines. And within days, Japan captured the American island of Guam. Japanese troops landed in Thailand. They marched into Malaya, and they seized Hong Kong. The Japanese also moved into Indonesia and Burma. Even Hitler's troops in Europe had not moved so quickly or successfully. As one American historian wrote later, the Pacific Ocean looked like a Japanese lake. The United States began to fight back. General Jimmy Doolittle led a group of 16 American B-25 bombers that took off from the aircraft carrier Hornet and bombed Tokyo in a surprise raid.
5:11 o'clock. The B-25 was selected because it was small, because it had the sufficient range to carry 2,000-pound bombs 2,000 miles, and because it took off and handled very well.
It was a bold move. The B-25 had never been launched from an aircraft carrier before, and the demands on the planes and the pilots were even greater with the weight of a full load of bombs. Japan's leaders believed no army could stop them, so they expanded their goals and launched new campaigns. That was Japan's mistake. It stretched its forces too thin and too quickly. The military leaders in Tokyo believed that the United States could not resist because American forces were busy fighting the war in Europe. But no country could extend its communications and fighting ability over such a great distance and continue to win. The turning point came in June 1942 in the Central Pacific with the Great Battle of Midway Island. Japanese Admiral Isoroku Yamamoto launched the battle. He wanted to meet and destroy the remaining ships in the American fleet before the United States could recover from the destruction at Pearl Harbor. Yamamoto had 162 ships. The American Admiral, Chester Nimitz, had just 76. But the United States had discovered how to read the secret messages of the Japanese forces. For this reason, Nimitz and the Americans knew exactly where the Japanese ships would sail, and they put their own ships in the best positions to stop them. The fighting between the two sides was fierce, but when it ended, the Americans had won a great victory. Admiral Yamamoto was forced to call off his attack and sail home. For the first time, the Japanese Navy had been defeated. The next big battle was at Guadalcanal, one of the Solomon Islands in the southwestern Pacific. Guadalcanal's beaches were wide and flat. Japanese officers decided to build a military airbase there. The United States learned of the plans. American commanders decided that they had to prevent Japan from establishing that base. United States Marines quickly landed on the island. They were joined by troops from Australia and New Zealand. But Japanese ships launched a surprise attack and destroyed many of the American ships in the harbor. Allied forces on the island were left without naval support and suffered heavy losses. For 6 months, the two sides fought for control of the island. Historian and naval officer Samuel Elliott Morrison described the fighting this way in his book, The Struggle for Guadalcanal.
For us who were there, or whose friends were there, Guadalcanal is not a name but an emotion, recalling desperate fights in the air, various night naval battles, frantic work at supply or construction, savage fighting in the sodden jungle, nights broken by screaming bombs and deafening explosions of naval shells.
The fighting continued seemingly forever, but finally, in February 1943, the Japanese were forced to leave Guadalcanal. The battle was an important defeat for Japan. It opened the door for the American and other Allied forces to go on the attack after months of defensive fighting. But American military planners did not agree about the best way to launch such an attack. Admiral Nimitz of the Navy wanted to capture the small groups of Japanese-held islands in the Pacific, then seize Taiwan, and finally attack Japan itself. But General Douglas MacArthur of the Army thought it would be best to attack through New Guinea and the Philippines. The American leadership finally decided to launch both attacks at once. Nimitz and MacArthur both succeeded. Nimitz and his naval forces moved quickly through the Marianas and other islands. General MacArthur's troops attacked through New Guinea and into the Philippines. American ships defeated Japanese naval forces in the battle for Leyte Gulf. Throughout the Pacific and East Asia, the fighting continued. Many of the fiercest battles were fought on tiny Pacific islands. Japanese troops captured the islands early in the war, and they quickly built strong defenses to prevent the Allies from invading. Allied military leaders found a way to defeat the Japanese plan. They simply avoided the islands where the Japanese were strong and attacked other islands. But sometimes the Allies could not avoid a battle. They had to land on some islands to seize airfields for American planes. The names of these islands became well known. Tarawa in the Gilbert Islands, Truk in the Marshall Islands, Saipan in the Marianas, and other islands including Guam and Tinian. The two sides fought fiercely in the Battle of Iwo Jima. And on Okinawa, Japanese forces resisted for 83 days before finally being defeated by Allied troops. After the defeat at Okinawa, many Japanese understood that the war was lost, even if Japan had not yet surrendered. Emperor Hirohito appointed a new prime minister and ordered him to explore the possibilities of peace. But both sides still expected the Allies to launch a final invasion into Japan itself. And everyone knew that the cost in human life would be great for both sides. But the invasion never came. For years, American scientists had been developing a secret weapon, the atomic bomb. The code name was the Manhattan Project. President Harry S. Truman made the decision to use it against Japan.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. We won the race of discovery against the Germans. We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans. We shall continue to use it until we completely destroy Japan's power to make war.
American planes dropped one of the bombs on Hiroshima on August 6, 1945. And another on Nagasaki 3 days later. Exactly how many people in those two cities died from the force and heat of the blasts, or later from radiation, may never be known. The Radiation Effects Research Foundation in Japan estimates that between 150,000 and 246,000 died within 2 to 4 months of the bombings. Japan surrendered on August 15, 1945, 6 days after the Nagasaki bombing.
Suddenly, sooner than expected, World War II was over. More than 50 million civilians and soldiers died during the 6 years of fighting. Germany and Japan were defeated. The Soviet Union was strong in much of Eastern Europe. But the United States found itself the strongest military, economic, and political power in the world. Our story continues tomorrow. A reminder, we now bring you The Making of a Nation on Sundays and Mondays on this program. This Making of a Nation program was written by David Jarmul. It was presented and produced by Steve Ember, and we thank them both. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. While you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to longer versions of the stories that you have just heard on this program. You can also read, listen to, and download our other programs. And you will find captioned videos and lessons to test your American English skills. We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also send us a message through our website. Please know that however you reach us, we do read every message you send. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.